Today is session two of Financial Freedom and Integrity with Jim and Jory Mansky. So how about we move into a self-connection exercise right now? I invite you right now into turning your attention inward to explore your own experience, to ground yourself in what is actually happening for you right here, right now. And you can start by just putting your attention on your visual field to just notice what you see. Connecting visually. And thoughts may arise about what you see. Just notice the distinction between the visual field and the visual information and anything that you're thinking. Just to know the difference. Your mind slips from your visual field. Just coach yourself back. Just pay attention to what you see. And now, if you're willing, shift your attention to the auditory channel of information. Putting your attention literally on your ears. And just notice. Thoughts arise. Just coach yourself back. Just name them as thoughts and just coach yourself back into your auditory channel. And then tune yourself into the physical sensations in your body, in particular in the core of your body, around your heart and your belly, trunk of your body. With some curiosity, tune into that kinesthetic channel now. Give yourself permission to feel whatever you feel. Again, if thoughts about what you feel or other thoughts arise, just acknowledge them as thinking and then let the thoughts go and let the feelings just be. Let the thoughts go. Let the feelings be. Let yourself be grounded in the here and now of your physical experience. And when the next thought arises, or now if you'd like, just consider your thought or your feeling telling you about what's important to you right now. What are you valuing? Just notice any requests, any ideas or preferences arise. They're important for you to bring forth in this call or to make a note of for yourself or after the call. And then allow your attention to shift if you're willing. Great choice you have to be able to shift. And in this moment, shift to your awareness of the circle of people, the group of people, our community. We are all gathered together. We are part of a community here. So, we'll move into a check-in. And for a few of us to briefly say how we are and if there's any breakthroughs or concerns about money that you want to share. There you go.
I did want to mention a concern that I had. Last week you suggested this mint.com to help keep track of expenses, which I thought was a great idea. And then as I looked into it, they were wanting to have my username and my password to my bank accounts. And the bank account basically says sharing your password is a misuse of the account, and any transactions initiated by anyone using that is considered authorized. And I guess there's trust issues. I'm having real trust issues over that.
Thanks for the feedback. I'm guessing you chose not to do that then.
I haven't done it yet. I was hoping I could get maybe some feedback from people who have used that account and what their experience is.
Jim, you checked this out and suggested it. Do you want to comment
on
that?
Yeah, I did check it out, and it seemed fine to me. It's actually owned by the same company that does Quicken, so they've had my bank account information for about 15 or 20 years because I would download transactions and so forth. So it felt okay to me, but if there's any concern or niggles, then I totally trust you to take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. And I noticed that you have your hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to celebrate that I have a little bit more awareness of my finances solely because we decided to jot down everything we're spending. We jotted everything down, and it's quite amazing to see where our money goes. And we didn't change our spending habits, or we had no intentions of doing that, until towards the end of the week, I thought, no, I don't want to buy that, or I don't need this. So there's actually an awareness without the feeling that I'm now restricted and I can't do something. So I'm really celebrating that.
Yeah, it's amazing how information, just by its nature, changes our behavior. We're more aware. We're more choiceful. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And let's see, we'll stay down under.
I just thought I'd share a general comment from everybody in the group, that there was just a lot of emotion attached to money, how we tended to use money to meet needs for comfort and ease in the moment, sort of instant gratification. And it wasn't particularly productive, but just noticing the impulse and the habit of using money to meet emotional needs that might be better met in other ways.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that breakthrough and that awareness that you and others are tuning into here. Yay! All right.
I noted down all my expenses, and I think I have a relatively high awareness of what I take in and what goes out, and have control over all of that, except a surprise came this week, and I was reminded that I think I have control, and then the universe steps in. I have a timeshare that I put up to be traded in July and discovered only yesterday by an email that the timeshare did not get traded, and I hadn't been informed. So I've been trying to clear the mishap up today, haven't had any headway with it, and it risks to cost me about $800 or $900 from that mistake. So I don't like it, but in a way I laughed, because here I was saying, I know what comes in, I know what goes out, I have a lot of awareness about that. And then I was reminded, and the universe does what it does.
Yeah, thank you, because that's right in alignment with our class today, which is around pain. You know, there it
is,
no matter what. Some of the pain we stimulate with our thinking and our limited thought, and some of it is just there's the universe, and it keeps happening and doesn't give us what we were hoping for. So thanks. Now, let's see.
One of the things that I've been aware of lately, helping with family business, is how money is related to mattering for so many people. And thinking now about, in this particular case, trying to divide up in the partnership who pays for what in this particular project. And there's this whole big thing of fairness and going back and forth. I'm not directly in the loop, and it's just incredible how these people are getting so triggered. Maybe it's not incredible, but it's just about, it's not fair, and, you know, do my needs really matter? Are you really seeing my side of this? And then on the other hand, which is similar, when I remember asking for a raise in the past, or when I was a consultant asking for a higher fee, and it wasn't given what I wanted, how it really brought up a lot of pain around mattering, and it was incredibly painful.
Yeah, thank you, because you're actually pointing to one of the bigger pains that we have, which is how we identify. Our identity is so wrapped up in money. Thank you.
I was coming into this call with some kind of jackal guilt judgment about, well, I haven't even looked at my homework. Yeah, I want to change my money stuff, but I'm willing to do anything. And an interesting thing has come up in the last few minutes is, and as I look at this, and it's got to do with some kind of core belief I haven't identified, but deep inside there's a little boy or somebody that doesn't want to have to deal with money because that's what the grown-ups do. I'm trying to articulate something, Jory, that I've just got getting in touch with, and it's got to do with I don't want to have to grow up. I don't want to have to be responsible. I'm just getting in touch with this, and I'm going to look at it more in empathy, but I'm getting some excitement about this has been holding me back into an infantile stage and not being mature with my own responsibilities for my own financial management, something like that. And so I'm kind of excited to be in touch with something so deep.
Yeah, I'm excited with you, actually, to be able to see it. Instead of it running your life, you are now having a thought, like turning around that locus of power. Yay. And it also reminded me, actually, what I had actually meant to invite for people was also to look at whatever beliefs come up for you about the practice opportunities. If you haven't done the practice opportunities, there's also an opportunity still to look at the beliefs and what goes on inside of us. It could be beliefs that got in the way of doing the exercises. It may be beliefs about having done it or not. So either way, looking at our beliefs.
What happened to me was I had a dental emergency, and that put me into a real depression about money, because it was like, oh, I can't really control my spending. And now that I'm starting this class, this is happening. And then I stopped and made myself see, or started looking at, that I did have a lot of choices. I could have gone to a dental school and get this fixed for little money. I could have found a dentist that was in my network of insurance. There's a lot of things, even that at the time it didn't seem that way, because I just went to my dentist and he referred me to a specialist, and I just went to that specialist. But there were actually a lot of choices I made, even if I didn't make them consciously.
Yes, and then you connected with other choices, which is really liberating, that you are not a victim, but rather you make choice.
And it was my choice to have a root canal done in 40 minutes as opposed to 2 hours in a dental school. I have to pay a little money for that now.
Yeah, that's one of the things money buys us sometimes, is convenience.
That was really what I've been playing with all week, to just see that I am making choices. And then also seeing how a lot of times I got to a place where I just didn't want to make choices. It seemed like too much work.
That's powerful. That is actually part of the shift from childhood to adulthood in this model. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. That was very rich for me to hear from a few of you, and really enjoyed what I learned as we went through that. And a lot of it really was a great bridge into our lesson today. All right. I'd like to invite everybody to just take a moment and notice how you feel right now as we dive into the lesson part. Notice any physical sensations or emotions that are present inside of you. And connect the feelings that you're having right now to your needs. Imagining you've arrived on the call with need for learning, need for exploration. Maybe some other needs are up for you. Just to notice those needs, and then to see if there's any requests that are bubbling up for you of how you would like to be on the call. And so last week we began to explore this notion of money maturity that we learned from a man named George Kinder. Some of you might be reading his book or have read his book, Seven Stages of Money Maturity. I'm really enjoying rereading it. We connected with George about 6 years ago or so and did his course. And I'm really enjoying the refresher of teaching it to you and how it's really helping me to go deeper into my own stuff around money. And last week we began with this idea of innocence, how in our innocence we just began collecting beliefs and we paid attention to some of the beliefs that we had identified and did our best to express them as one line. And then we also noticed how beliefs by their very nature are impartial and therefore inaccurate and are only giving a small part of the information available. So they're limited maps. And we often saw how our beliefs could be in counterpoint to the exact opposite. And so that was how we began to frame this idea of where we all start this journey towards money maturity, collecting beliefs and these incorrect, inaccurate maps of the world. And then this week we're going to kind of grow up a little bit and move from innocence into the second stage of money maturity, which George Kinder calls pain, and we call pain and suffering. So we've moved into adolescence now. So I'd like to start by just giving you an idea or two about the distinction that seems to be clear to me between pain and suffering. And NBC really seems to have clarified it a lot. The words are used synonymously in our culture, but NBC is built on these distinctions, for example, between observation and observation, mixed with evaluation, feelings and thoughts and so forth. So for me, these distinctions can really add a layer of clarity. So pain for me is the feelings that naturally arise when the needs that we have aren't satisfied. I always like to talk about those basic needs like the need for sustenance and the pain that arises if my need for sustenance in the form of food isn't met is hunger. So that's a very natural process. Likewise, if I'm needing connection and I'm not getting it in the way that I would like, I might feel lonely or sad. So these feelings are like signals that our body sends us to alert us to the state of our needs from moment to moment. And they come in two forms, emotions and physical sensations. Physical sensations are kind of like this raw information, like butterflies in the stomach or noticing a clenched jaw or a tightened fist or noticing constricted breathing, that sort of thing. And sometimes we can ascribe words to the physical sensations in our body. So we might notice that the combination of a racing heart and lots of blood going to our legs and this impulse to flee, we call that fear. And so That's another way of describing it, is through the words that point to emotion. And in NBC, we learned this very key idea that feelings are stimulated by observation, and yet they're caused by needs. This is an idea we'll return to over and over again during the time of this course and throughout any kind of exploration of NBC. Now, our life is full of these kinds of observations related to money that can be painful, like someone during the check-in mentioned this idea about finding out that a deal that they thought they had made on their timeshare didn't happen and it cost them money. So stuff like that happens all the time. There could be mistakes that we make with figuring out our taxes, or we might decide to try our hand at a get-rich-quick scheme and find out that it costs us a bunch of money, or maybe we go through a divorce, or somebody dies, or we get disabled, or somebody steals money, or somebody betrays us, lose money in investments, natural disasters can happen. All these things are just, these things are likely to happen to us in the course of our life with money. And so each of these things that can happen could be framed as an observation. We could say something like here's something that's common for me in this practice of keeping track of my money. I do my best to do it every day, at least I used to. Now it's more like once a week or whatever. I go back and I've learned to kind of rely on these automated programs, mostly use credit cards or checkbooks and so forth, and so don't spend much cash. And so then when I actually end up justifying the cash register, I'm almost always over or short. And so that's just an observation. I noticed that actually I can't account for $25, and that's different than the evaluation that I might have that I should, quote, do a better job of keeping track of my money. Or I wonder if somebody took that money from me without me knowing it. Some of these evaluations that can sneak in. And this begins to point us towards this notion of suffering, which are the disconnecting judgment that we can attach to the feelings that we have. And it's the suffering that begins to perpetuate a cycle within us. Like, I love what Joe said in the check-in about really getting in touch with this deep core belief around not wanting to grow up around money. And I know I have those kinds of stories in myself. Like, I have this idea that no matter how much I accumulate, it won't be enough. And I'll glom on to that evaluation and chew on it, and it's almost like I become addicted to the drama of having that as part of my story. And that drama will actually motivate me to behave in certain ways that may not be in my best interest, but might be coming directly out of that belief, thus perpetuating it. So it's a way of perpetuating the cycle between innocence and pain. So let's look at some of the ways that as we're growing up with money, that we might get jarred awake from innocence. First one is that we become aware at some point of our life, and you might just think about this in your own life, at some point you became aware of inequality. You noticed that you had more money than some people, or more access to money than some people. And you also noticed that you had less access to money than some people. This can shatter innocence. I remember being quite young, and somehow, I think it was actually at church, I think the preacher started talking about how the collection today was a special collection, and it was going to go to help the poor. And it was the first time I ever realized that there were poor people. I thought that everybody was just like me. And to find out that there were some people that were poor kind of jarred me, and it kind of it was almost like discovering that there wasn't Santa Claus. It shattered an illusion that I had for my life before that. That's one thing, is becoming aware of inequality. The second thing that can be a source of pain is discovering, and this happened for me maybe when I was around 13 or 14, that if I was going to survive in the world, I had to manifest money. And usually the way we do it in our culture is we get a job, we start working. At some point, I wanted something, and I didn't have enough money to get it, and I approached my parents about getting it, which had always been the way that I'd gotten everything that I'd wanted up to that point. And they said, well, if you want to get that, great, go earn some money. In fact, you could start doing some chores around the house and earning money, or whatever happens. And that's like a moment of awakening that I realized that if I'm going to survive in this world, I need to manifest money. And of course, the way that we typically do it is exchanging our time for money in the form of work. But some people find other ways of doing it. They might manipulate to get money, or they might try gambling. They might count on an inheritance coming in, or some people marry for money. And a few of us even decide that crime does pay. And so we'll start plotting a way to use a criminal enterprise in order to manifest the money that we think we need. So that's the second way that we can get jarred awake from innocence, is to discover that we need to manifest money to survive. And then the third way that we can awaken from innocence is to just notice on an ongoing basis that when we take actions that don't meet our needs, it can create pain. And if we begin to link the actions that we take around money with these beliefs that we identified and will continue to identify, and see that we're coming from beliefs about money or beliefs about people or beliefs about systems rather than from observations, then we will continue to suffer the pain of those unmet needs. And if there's one takeaway I'd love for you to take away from the class today, is just to begin to notice how the pain that we feel around money can be a bell of mindfulness. That when you notice that something isn't working around money, that can wake you up to do some self-empathy, some self-exploration at the level of beliefs or around the level of your behaviors or capabilities. We'll explore all that over the course of the next few weeks. Let's look at the elements of suffering that you can find through studying NVC that can really help you to unpack some of these beliefs. And these are called the 4 D's of disconnection. I like to call it the periodic table of disconnection. So if you imagine a piece of paper in front of you, if you have one, you can actually do this. You can just put a cross in the middle of the piece of paper and put a D on each block of the cross. And we'll just very briefly describe each of these D's and how it can relate to money. First D is the denial of responsibility. And we deny responsibility whenever we think that we have to, or that we should, or that we don't have a choice. So we're denying the choice that's available. I like that when someone in the check-in talked about a dental emergency that arose. And they, at first, they kind of went through what I interpreted as a denial of responsibility. I just have to go to this expert. And then they realized later, they woke up to the possibility that they had other choices that they weren't aware of at first. I have a hand raised. Let's check in.
I noticed that I was distracted still thinking about something that you said. And what you said is that at some point, we all become aware of the fact that we need money to survive. And I actually don't agree with that premise. We need goods and services. But money is just a construct that in this culture people believe they need. Even in this country, people challenge that assumption and survive quite well.
Yeah, I'm in harmony with what you said, and if I said that you need money, that's not what I intended to say. What I have in my notes and what my experience is that we must manifest money to survive. And it doesn't have to be money, it could be in the form of goods, but we need to manifest, in other words, we need to do something. We need to take some sort of an action that we're not going to just be handed.
We're
responsible for manifesting it.
Yeah. I follow that. But the other part is like a culturally common belief that, in my view, is part of the problem.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't let that go unsaid. Thank you.
Thank you for saying that, because that is what I've become so aware of with all the Occupy work and all this economy questioning and the problems with the economy, is that we seem to think the economy is a reality that's outside of ourselves. And in actuality, we're kind of like fish in the water. You know, we think that's the water we swim in. And I know many people who create their own economy and their own relationship to an economy inside and are not in that space where the economy is wagging our lives. So thank you so much for bringing that up.
let me just go through. I'll say what all four D's are, and then I'll go back and define them. The four D's, denial of responsibility was the first. Second one is diagnosis. Third one, demand. And the fourth one, deserve. We've already defined denial of responsibility, which is often the kind of thinking that is what we have to do or what we should do. Then diagnosis, the easiest way that I can think of to talk about diagnosis is it answers the question, who is what? And so when we're diagnosing somebody as he is greedy or he is lazy, that's the kind of diagnosis that can relate to money issues. Basically, we slip into creating a belief on the spot about who somebody is at the identity level. We begin to evaluate them as morally wrong rather than to remember that we have the choice of staying connected to our observation. So that's diagnosis. And it's related to its close cousin, which is comparison, where I say this is directly related to that one part of pain where we become aware of inequality and loss. We think that he's rich and I'm poor, or I'm rich and he's poor. And that quality of comparative diagnosis can lead to a lot of suffering and disconnection. Then the third D is demand. And this is basically when, if we don't get what we want, we're going to punish whoever it is that we think should have given it to us in the first place. And this is the source of all kinds of violence in the world. You know, even at the state level, one country will demand of the other that they sign some kind of a trade agreement. If they don't get the terms that they want, then a trade war will begin, and they'll start trying to punish each other by increasing tariffs. And it can happen in our own lives, where if we make a demand of somebody to behave in a certain way, we don't get our way, we make sure they pay. That's demand. And then the final D, which may be the most pernicious, the most disconnecting of all, is the notion of deserve. Directly related to the idea that often springs from innocence, that I deserve to be wealthy, or I deserve to be poor, I deserve to have it all, I don't deserve anything. We begin to link what we have or what we can do at the identity level. So that's deserved. Let me just pause here and see if any questions are emerging about these four D's of disconnection. Okay, your microphone is live.
I was listening to some affirmation videos on the internet about acquiring wealth and sort of going down that road and just to see sort of what was out there. And I did feel good, but I'm suspect a little bit about some of those affirmations around money in the context of deserve here. I'm wondering what you might have to say about that. And I do believe affirmations can be very helpful. I've certainly used them in my own work. You know, I am rich, you know. It's not, I want to be rich, or I hope you're rich. You know, I am rich. And certainly have helped myself physically that way. I feel great. You know, suddenly my ailments have go away. But I am rich, and to say that 3,000 times a day, I'm wondering, I guess, if my inner struggle about the deserve, you know, where do those mantras fit in the deserve?
Deserve really is at the identity level. And two things come up for me about what you're saying. One is that we can try to instill another belief that resonates more clearly with us and leaves us in a more resourceful state. and that can be helpful. So this is actually around managing our own state. And for me, what really excites me is to take it to the next level. And actually, having said that, I'm really wanting to acknowledge that either of these work. But for me, what I'm looking for is to look at the observations of what actually is, rather than functioning out of the belief, function out of information. Sometimes using those beliefs enable us to be resourceful enough and clear-headed enough to be able to look at observations more clearly, because some of the beliefs that are so debilitating and so limiting and so obscuring of our mind get in the way of our observations. So how does that land for you?
So what I hear you're saying is, instead of perhaps saying, you know, I am rich, let's say I'm making a dollar on a product, and instead of judging and saying, oh my gosh, it's only a dollar, the affirmation right in front of me is, wow, I'm making a dollar. You know, wow, I made a dollar. That's right in front of me, as opposed to the sort of abstract, I am rich. It's like, wow, I made a dollar. And to be observant of what it is I'm saying, as opposed to, again, gee, I only made a dollar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one is an observation, I made a dollar, and then the other is the thought that we add to it that's disconnecting, which is, it's not okay, it's not enough, something's wrong here, all of those things. These are part of the deeds of disconnection that we were talking about, and they relate to suffering.
I see what you're saying. So just in classical NVC with other subjects, stay strictly with the observation so I don't get into the judgment, the evaluation, the blame, the shame, the guilt around what it is that I'm observing.
Yeah, and I also want to acknowledge that sometimes shifting into a different belief can be useful. I just find it is. I feel better, I'm more present, I'm more engaged. Somehow it's playing with those limiting beliefs and shifting them. It's kind of like what we did last week, where we were looking at the opposites. Some of those opposites are helpful for loosening us up. But if we get, then get attached to them, then we're again back in some form of limitation, which may actually be healthier than the other. Ultimately, I'm pretty pragmatic about this. What works? Sometimes that works.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Jory. The last thing that I want to say about what makes deserve disconnecting for me is when we link it to an external source of punishment or reward. But that's the part that can become a slippery slope. And it can begin to build into some of these compounds that we create from these four Ds. And I just want to go briefly through these three compounds that when we add these Ds together, we can create these particular kinds of suffering. One is a moral judgment of ourselves, like I deserve to be punished because I didn't work hard enough or something like that. This kind of self-rejection tends to generate some pretty debilitating emotions like shame, guilt, and depression. But becoming aware of the moral judgments and beginning to notice them around yourself is the first step of beginning to unpack these four Ds and replacing the Ds with life, with the needs that can help us to thrive and to flourish in the world. So that's the first compound, is moral judgments of self. Second compound that we create from these four Ds is moral judgments of others. Often in NBC, we use the term enemy image to describe these moral judgments of others. So he's greedy, he's lazy, thinks of herself, she's selfish. And when these thoughts are tinged with a moral judgment of wrongness or rightness, we tend to generate an enemy image. And the enemy image feeds some other debilitating emotions, And when I say debilitating, what I mean is they suck the life out of us. They might give us temporary boosts, like these moral judgments of others can often generate anger, resentment, blame, or hatred. And it might feel good in the moment. Even the sense of righteous indignation might be temporarily energizing, but just like having a hit of sugar or a hit of methamphetamine, we'll crash after we generate these feelings. And again, it's not to say that there's anything wrong with these moral judgments. That would be like playing the same game, or that we shouldn't do it. That would be slipping into a moral judgment of self. But just to begin to notice that we do this and that we have some choice around it, and that there's some more effective ways of meeting the same needs that these moral judgments are designed to meet. And the final compound that I want to just mention here before we move into a practice, the final compound that can lead to a lot of suffering around money is moral judgments of systems. When we start to blame authority for our lot in life, this can often even take the form of conspiracy theories. I'm not saying that there's not a thing called a domination system that can affect people, can affect me. I'm not saying that there's not conspiracy theories. Maybe there are, maybe they're not. But what I do know is that when we think through the lens of having a moral judgment that systems are wrong or bad or evil, that will tend to generate some debilitating emotions in us, like rage, despair, helplessness. And again, the idea is not to try to not do that, but to notice it when we do, and to move toward the self-empathic process in order to get more connected to the life underneath the moral judgment. To realize that all three types of moral judgments are just tragic expressions of unmet needs, and that through the power of nonviolent communication, we can get more connected to the life underneath and move towards more life-affirming choices, more energetic choices that have the opposite effect of these debilitating emotions. Okay, so let's do a written process and explore one of these beliefs and see if we can unpack the suffering of the belief and get to the life underneath it. So pick one of your own innocent beliefs, maybe one that you identified last week, or one that you discovered during your practice of the week. Pick one innocent belief and write it down as the first observation. For example, I have to work hard for money. So I'll just pause for 1 minute. Okay, so the next step is to say this belief to yourself several times. Just start saying it to yourself and notice how your body feels as you say it. And write down any physical sensations or emotions that you notice. So for example, if I tell myself I have to work hard to earn money and I say it to myself with some intensity, I start to feel scared and I feel kind of worn out, tired. I notice my breathing is shallow, and I have this impulse to run away. So again, I'll pause for about a minute while you explore this belief for yourself. So as you continue to explore this belief, allow yourself to feel the feelings. Begin to let go of the thought of the belief. Let the thought go. Let yourself lean in to the feeling in your body. See if you can cultivate some curiosity to explore physical sensations and emotions that are present when you think in this way. Even as you let the thought go, let the feeling be. And make a gentle inquiry into yourself. What needs are met by holding on to this belief? What's the positive intention of believing in this way?
Another way of saying that is, if this were true, then what would I have?
So, for example, as I connect to this belief that I started with, I have to work hard to earn money. The positive intention for me is that gives me some clarity, or I think it'll give me clarity, and it inspires me to do something. What is it for you? What's the positive intention for believing this? So a belief is kind of like a strategy in a way. And so although there may be a positive intention and even some positive benefits to believing certain things, it also may come with a cost in terms of unmet needs or pain. So what needs are unmet by believing this? Something was causing those uncomfortable feelings. Some needs were unmet. Take a moment and explore for yourself what those needs might be. Like for me, the unmet needs are around fun and freedom. What is it for you? Now just holding those needs as precious in your heart and with an attitude of savoring. Just consider what actually happens in the world in terms of this belief. What observations can you make related to the belief? So again, mine was I have to work hard to earn money. If I look at it observationally, I notice that sometimes when I work hard, I get money, and sometimes I can work hard and still have fun. Sometimes I can work hard and not get money. Sometimes I can receive money without working, like earning interest or getting some money for an investment or selling something that I don't need. So take a couple of minutes and consider what actually happens in the world for you in terms of the belief, and jot down some observations. We'll do this for about 1 minute. Okay. Well, you may not be finished. Everyone does this at a different time. You can always go back and explore some of these observations in more detail some other point during the week. But if you've got at least one written down and or can think of one, just notice how you feel right now, noticing the observation or observations. For me, as I connect to the observation, it kind of opens me up. I feel really kind of amazed and curious. How do you feel? And as you connect to the feelings that are present in you right now, connect that. Connect those feelings to your needs. What's deeply important to you? What are the feelings that you're having right now telling you is important to you? And savor those needs. Just connect to the energy of life contained in the words that point to the deeper experience in your body of those needs. Savor there. Savor them in your body, in your heart. You might imagine just sending out the need as a gift to yourself and to the whole world. For me, the needs were around openness to outcome and creativity. And so just send that out like a wish, another way that you can savor. To send it out, imagining what the world would be like if that need was reliably met for everybody, whatever it was that you chose, whatever you connected to. And then finally, take a minute or so and consider how you could express the spirit of the belief that it was more full, that it included the observations that you made and the needs that you identified. In other words, edit your belief to more fully express your experience now. So, for example, I might edit mine to say, money can flow into my life when I work hard and when I relax. Check in. There's a question on the board here. Jane?
I'm not sure which need I'm supposed to be working on right now.
Okay. It doesn't really matter is the short answer. And the one that I was intending is, like, after you did the observation, and then notice how you feel, noticing those observations, and connect that feeling to a need. That's the need that I was intending. But it works for any of the needs because they're all interrelated. So you can't make a mistake with that one. Okay?
Thanks.
Okay. Would you give the instruction again, Jim, please?
You bet. So the last instruction is to edit the belief that you started with to make it more fully express what you've learned through doing the self-empathy process that we've been playing with. So if you're finished with that, great. If you're not, that's also okay. But if you are finished, then just say this new belief to yourself, like you've just written yourself a new affirmation in a way, something that is more in alignment with what's really important to you and what you've noticed about how the world works. So just say this new phrase to yourself and notice how you feel as you say it. And as you say it, notice how you feel. And as you notice how you feel, again, connect it to your needs and savor those needs. And the invitation now, just to notice as we bring this exercise to completion, notice how you feel right now and give yourself permission to feel whatever you feel and to have had whatever experience you've had for the last 15 minutes or so. And I'd love to hear from a few of you about what it was like to go through this process, what you learned about yourself, anything that you'd like to say about the exercise, whether you liked it or not, whether you learned something.
My belief that I wrote down was that I'm always going to have to take care of myself. And when you asked us to come up with evidence that that is not true, I actually thought of many, many instances where I was not able to take care of myself, and people who stepped in to help out, even total strangers at times. You know, when you add up all those observations and put them together, it was pretty powerful. And so my new belief statement was we all depend on each other to get ahead. And that, it's just so liberating to think that way instead of always thinking I have to take care of myself. Yeah.
Thank you. Anybody else want to say anything about what you learned about the exercise before we move into the next piece?
I started with a deep belief money is the most important thing. And as I looked at it through this exercise, at that belief, I ended up at money is only a tool, or we'd say a strategy, not a goal. And I'm feeling that on a deeper, not just a saying, but feeling it, and it gives me some freedom. And that led to a sense that managing money to create happy sustainability is real and possible, not some kind of fantasy.
Great. Thanks for sharing that. Appreciate going on your journey with you. Time for one more, and then we'll go to Jordi.
My belief was I have to do something unpleasant to earn money, and there seems to be a strategy of not taking responsibility, because then there's always somebody else who tells me what to do, and it's their responsibility. And what I was surprised was that I came to a place where I actually felt much less stressed and much calmer by taking on the responsibility and considering that I can do what I'm interested in doing and earn money.
Thank you. Appreciate you sharing that. Jordi, I'd like to go on to the next step, please.
We will be giving you some exercises that you can do at home, and one of them will be about collecting more information, and we'll continue to collect the information. You'll continue to track what you are spending. There'll also be a written exercise for exploring more deeply within yourself, and then there will also be an exercise that you can do on the spot, so to practice live in what comes up in your life, and we'll go through those. To support the next level of collection of information, I'd like you to do a little bit more of a written exercise. We'll just spend another 5 minutes or so on this, then we'll move toward something a bit more interactive for our checkout. The first step in this is to, right now, write down every job that you have had. Just take about 2-3 minutes and try and remember all the different jobs you've had in your life and do that linearly, a list.
And specifically, you mean jobs where someone has earned money. Is that right, Tori?
Yeah, jobs where you have gotten paid money. And for those of you who have completed writing down every job you've had that you can remember right now that you've gotten paid for, you can also write down other sources of money that you've received directly, such as from gifts and inheritances and returns on investments, things like that, money you found, money that has come to you. And just make a list of those sources. And what you'll do with this as part of the homework or the practice opportunity and in preparation for next week when we're moving into adulthood in our model is over the next week, try and estimate how much you have received from each of these sources and to get a sense of the money that has actually flowed through your life. Thus far, this will be the next piece in our data collection. And I'll also post the additional practices for on the spot and also a little further on working on your beliefs, similar to what we've done in this class in preparation. And so we can now have an opportunity to hear from everybody. I'd love to hear who would like to share something, some sort of nugget that you're taking away.
I'm developing a personal, intimate relationship with money due to your class, as if it was a lover or a close relationship, which is new for me. And I expect a lot out of relationships, reliability and trust and commitment and all those things, and money has been more of a moving target. So that's a sweet recognition to think of money as an intimate partner.
Thank you. Yeah, creating a healthy, intimate relationship as opposed to an adversarial one. Yeah, thank you.
Early in the call, I made this note at the bottom. It was sort of a despairing, hopeless note that I am actually not believing that I can change my attitude, my relationship to money, but the nugget thing is that after this exercise and looking at stuff, I do feel loosening up of some of these deep, rigid jackal belief things. And so I'm starting to feel a little light and a little ease and a little looseness about transforming things. So that's my joy.
Oh, thank you.
I just wanted to share how extremely grateful I am and happy to be doing this in the context of NVC, which is about inclusion and acceptance. I feel very, very supported by everybody who's contributing to this. And I've really been needing support lately, so that meets my need.
Thank you. And I'm actually seeing that there have been a few questions that came by. In particular, someone asked in the exercise that I was preparing us for the rest of the week, what about freelance work and how challenging that can be as an entrepreneur? And I resemble that remark. And just do the best you can over the next week to just gather the information. There's no right or wrong in it. Okay, anybody else want to say anything to check out, to feel complete, celebrate, to mourn?
I'd love to say something. This is Jim. And I really enjoyed the call. For me, it was very rich to just be reminded of the pliability of my own beliefs and that they can be edited. I just love the idea that I can edit my beliefs and that it can change my experience of the world. And I really appreciating that reminder and really appreciating everyone's participation. And I love the questions as well and the feedback. Thanks.
And one of my favorite sayings is from A Course in Miracles. We give the world all the meaning it has for us. And this meaning is often given in these beliefs. And we can take it even deeper and give meaning in terms of universal values. So that's really exciting for me. Aloha.